Did you ever see this little booklet about Dexter? Did I give you a copy of it?
Is that, I've got one too.
Yeah, wait a minute.
A company documentary.
Yeah, that gives some of the beginning. This may even use just...
You were publishing things like your applications of barium number determinations. Did those connect directly to your business? Or
Yes, because many of the papers that we had done, I had done on mercerizing, directly concerned our expertise in the field of mercerizing, where we sold chemicals for mercerizing.
So were you working in the lab in between?
I was at
lab. Where was your time going?
In the first several, many years of the company, I did the following. One, I worked in the laboratory with several of our chemists. We had several chemists developing new products. Number two, I went myself to the plants to work and see that the plant worked properly. Three, I handled the public relations. I'd write the technical letters to the customers. I also, in the early days of my company, used two titles so I could play any part that I needed. I was president and I was technical director of the company. So depending on what the problem was in the early days, if I went with my salesman in New York to work on a technical problem, he was a vice president, New England sales manager, and I was technical director of the company. So if things came up about prices or costs or anything like that, my answer was, look, I'm a technical man. My job is to work out these things technically. If I went to another place where I was just making a general sales call and promoting the company, I was the president. If a technical thing came up and I wanted a chance to think about it, I say, look, I'm concerned. Look, this is what you do, because I had to wear all these hats. And I didn't want to always be the final answer on anything at one time. I needed a chance to change my feeling and listen, think it over.
When you said you had your first chief chemist came with you from Haft, when did you grow beyond having one lab?
Well, it was, I would say, within a year we had several chemists.
So the lab capability.
The lab was always an important part. Oh, yes. Another thing we did, is we tried to get salesmen that were not just salesmen but technical men, so that they could both make the customer want to buy and also go in and work in the plant as much as possible to give them technical service. So our men were both salesmen and technical service men. But on a lot of specialties, I mean in mercerizing particularly, I had to be the guy. And I, in the earliest days, I was considered the country's or world's expert in the field of mercerizing. And I used to agree to go in and give seminars to a whole mill, bring in all their people connected with it on the various aspects of it and help them and review their equipment and do everything. That was also public relations. It might end up that they didn't need buy any mercerizing penetrants. In fact, I remember visiting plants and going over it and say, you're doing such a fine job, it'd be a sin to change anything. Well, they appreciated so that then they were willing to trust us with other things where we could really do something for them. That's always been a part of our business. I think I ought to get into some of our key developments that are not the same as the other people. And by the developments in public relations and proper handling and advertising, we made them bywords in the industry. When Dexter started, it had two key type of chemicals, greatly, completely different from anybody else. One was the cellulose solutions, which after the war were not needed because the whole field was different.
Those were almost used for camouflage.
That had been used on the nets that were the mosquito netting and all that. But it's a different world after the war. The standard chemicals, standard processes, we were expert in, but it was more, all we had to offer was our superior working ability and maybe a little better technical knowledge. But as far as unusual different chemicals, we weren't making them. We made them more carefully, we controlled the quality, but they were not greatly different. Now, Dexter originated a number of new, unusual, and different approaches to the field, which started first with the textile field, but it fitted into pulp and paper, paints, and many other things. One of the first of Dexter's big developments was in the field of phosphated surfactants. Dexter pioneered, became acknowledged as the world leaders in this field in many, many industries, and is more or less acknowledged as a leader today. Here's how this started. One day, a salesman, this is in the early days of Dexter, sent in to us a sample of a chemical which a mill was using, which he said is supposed to be different. Take a look at it. We examined the chemical, and it contained, instead of sulfate, as many of the sulfated oil and other chemicals were, sulfated alcohols, it was phosphated instead of sulfated. And while the product that we had no great unusual properties, it seemed to be very stable and different. And I said, well, we ought to take a look at the field. Why must we only use sulfate? What's wrong with using phosphoric acid or phosphating? So we started and began to make a study of the field, and we found, firstly, using phosphoric acid to treat like you use sulfuric acid didn't end up in any unusual properties from our standpoint. What are we looking for in those days? Wetting, dispersing, detergency, things like that. I had a whole line of just work going on to study the properties of this, and we were the earliest, I think, to not use phosphoric acid, but P2O5, which works in deeper and is a different thing. To make a long story short, we found that certain non-ionics and certain long-chain alcohols each showed certain unusual properties in the way of wetting and dispersing. And we felt that this was unusual and went further, and these chemicals were more stable than many of the others on the market based on sulfate. And we felt this was a field that could offer a broad type of chemicals with properties that could be manipulated in many directions. We came out, and our first name, the first product we made, was a product called Barisol, BRM. And Barisol BRM was a phosphated complex alcohol and it showed extremely good wetting properties, but extreme stability over a wide range of pHs, alkalis, etc. And it seemed to have some very good dispersing properties, keeping dirt and stuff. We found that it also had good dye leveling properties. So that became a key item. We advertised it, we tried it, we had mills using it. It gave them a sort of insurance in many of their operations that they never had with the other surfactants that were used. And we continued to study this field.
Would you know when you introduced that?
Well, let me see if this thing, it's fairly early. Probably after Dexter was...
Still in the 40s.
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. I don't know whether it was the third year or second year or first. Wait a minute. Oh, it was in the 40s, yes. As time went on, we developed a whole field of phosphated surfactants under the name of Strodex of different types. Strodex, S-T-R-O-D-E-X. And these had great uses in the textile industry, then in the pulp and paper industry, in the paint industry, and today they're widely used in many, many industries. The Strodexes were basically based on, we had patents which were granted back on the thing. But the Strodexes, for the most part, many of them were based on a combination, a synergistic effect of a phosphated long chain alcohol and a what we call a non-ionic surfactant. But they were phosphated together as units, and they formed a very peculiar type of complex, more or less. I mean, we draw pictures and we think this is happening, but they were different than if you just mixed a couple of these things. We have patents on that. The patents were granted. They finally expired a little while ago, but there were patents. And we built up for us a big business. The interesting thing about these products were that we could look at these as a three-cornered, three properties, almost like a triangle, that were fixed, almost as if you took a string and you had three nails. And you could move the nails different ways, but you had to let up on the other. And one corner of this triangle, you could say, was wetting. Another point on the triangle was dispersion. And another point on the triangle is emulsification. And I distinguish between dispersion of keeping solid particles like pigments in suspension, as against keeping oil droplets or working in the normal emulsion things that you can do with oils. Now, what we could do, we learned the techniques by varying the basic lengths of the chains in the, both the alcohol and the non-ionic thing, and also some of the technique of phosphation. We could increase and make a thing very high in wetting. We give up some of the dispersion, but we'd always keep the three things, and we could do these to fit particular industries. This is how we develop a whole group to fit a lot of industries. And actually, we were the leaders. We advertised. We were known. Our competitors didn't even try to get anywhere near us until finally our patents finally expired, and then they would try to copy a product, which they do some now, but we are still have a big business. We found that these properties were needed in every industry because you have different degrees of emulsification, wetting, and dispersion needed in different industries. The paint industry used large, there's not a nationally known or I would say even unnationally known, any paint company that isn't using dextrostrodexes. And while I don't think this belongs in here, the names of companies, but there's not a one, all the biggest ones are using these and have for years. And it's met, what does it do? Well, it's made the paints are more stable, they've got better color yield, they flow different, they can get all kinds of things in development of formulations, which they could never do with any other.
Who were your rivals, other small companies, or what's the nature of the business?
Nature of the people, there are always small companies, frankly. Our biggest rivals were never the large companies. I mean, the DuPont, the others were generally not our competitors because they were interested in mainly enormous quantities of bulk materials. In the field of nonionics as such, I'm not nonionic, phosphate of surfactants, our only competitor was GAF, more or less. GAF never really made the things that were under our patents. They made simple phosphated nonionics that were listed and as such. They always admitted, even when they tested, that our patented things were different and they couldn't achieve these things normally. Now, in the textile industry, we had one large company who was a competitor against our phosphated, our Barisol, one of our first, and that was Sandoz. They had a particular, from a different structure, but it could never quite achieve the properties of ours. We would more or less knock them out everywhere where they were selling their particular chemical in the textile industry. But in general, our competitors were the smaller companies who sold their chemicals not because they were good, but because they were buddies with Dyer, the superintendent, etc. Mm-hmm. Technically, I've always felt we've never had any real competition broadly.
Is that still continuing?
And I feel that's still so. Most of the really the good smaller companies in general were bought up. Those that were technically fairly good have been bought up by the German companies, some amalgamated to others. Dexter today is still probably the only, even on our 20, Dexter's now in its 43 years. Yeah, more or less 43 years. On our 25th anniversary, the advertising that we ran said that Dexter is the only independent American company still dedicated to these things and doing. They disappear. And we've kept it that way. We've had many offers through the years. But who needs it? All these big companies generally do is destroy it disappears. It's a good thing that you have but don't exist.
What was the size of the company in sales? Small. 1950, let's say.
The company has very small, if you look at dollars and things. The company today is in order $25-30 million. The company in the early days, $5-8 million.
Do you know roughly when you passed 1 million or 10 million? Were you aware of milestones?
More or less, but not, yeah. But you see, the important thing that must remember, that a company, to me, has always been based on what it does and what it makes, not what is the volume. And we have refused. Our company can do hundreds of millions of dollars a year if it wanted to just simply turn over money. Our company is one of the most, well, I don't care if it goes in here, one of the most profitable companies. When we do $25 million a year, we make what most of the companies have to do $150 million to do.
And this is because of the performance knowledge of
the performance, and we get paid. We are known as the Cadillac, it's always called, that our things are expensive, but we have the things and the results. We're not, I've never wanted to be a banker. I refuse business. I'm not interested in being a banker to a company, which means that I'm interested in getting paid and getting paid well, so I can come out with it, I can have money to give to the different things, and so our people are paid extremely well, so the people pay for it. We have what is known as a high added value to us.
And that was apparent from the first day.
From the first, I would not operate. Our type of markup and our price is much higher than any of our competitors. That's my principle. If you're a specialist, you're entitled. Right, and that's why I don't like when people ask me, what's your turnover? Bullshit. I've got companies that turn over hundreds of millions of dollars and they do well if they make a couple of million dollars. Stupid, by my thing.
I was looking perhaps to the question of whether the growth was very rapid in an early period, or it's been more or less
the growth has been slow and continuing.
Or has it gone in spurts?
Slow. It has grown as we added new things and new industries.
Can you detail the succession of industries that you were obviously starting in textiles?
Well, it was textiles, but then we move into different types of textiles in different parts of the country. For example, again, if we talk on dollar volume is one thing. If we talk on profits and what we accomplish is another thing. You see, our customers would ask us, please, well, how about selling certain other things that they buy, like jobber things? They'd like to buy it from us. Sell hundreds of millions of dollars of stuff because they know we'd watch over it, but it doesn't pay us. For what? They don't mean anything. But our our improvements have been with expanding of territories and improvement with expanding of new chemicals they've added. Barisol added, the phosphated things added, the new ones that allowed us to move into the paint industry. We didn't have anything for the paint industry, so we had that. A big industry today that we're moving in and will become enormous is today the processing of garments after they're made, rather than the textiles.
Can you explain that a little more?
Well, now we're not being consecutive, but I'll tell you about it. For example, let's take a thing, a big thing today is denim, the denim pants. The normal way that denims were made were as follows. These large textile mills made denim fabrics where the warp, that's the main thing running up and down, 70% of the way the fabric was warp and 30% filling is called. And the way it was done is the warp was dyed with indigo and long machines and starch was put on, it was woven in, you ended up with this blue fabric. And it came out stiff like a board, and people washed it and lost its color, etc. Now, one of the things that came along was the idea, style-wise, of this wash look. Uh, to get this washed look, even in the mill, let's say they want to wash it. These people didn't know what to do. We're experts in cleaning and washing, so we developed our techniques into that. Now it came along all these special effects where they wanted special things with stones. We developed a chemical way of doing it. It's becoming and has become a big industry, so that today many of these are put on, even right, we're involved even in putting on the colors and everything, finishes, preparation, doing everything after the garment is made, rather than starting from the... That's a big new field, very important to us. We're among the top people in that. Because our 40 years of expert knowledge doesn't exist in the average laundry or wherever they would want us to do it, they started off. So that offers an expansion for us. As I say, the paint industry from development of chemicals. Now, a number of years ago, resins became a thing to use to get wash and wear and other effects on textiles. A lot of the companies were in it. They were selling an ordinary urea formaldehyde resins and other things that anybody could make, and there's low profit. We decided to move into the field, but with something special, on which was offer something special and offer some real profit. We studied the literature, we went and felt that the uron structure, which had only been written up as a theoretical thing in a Japanese magazine at the time. And we studied and developed that into a thing where it could be done in a practical way.
What brought it to your attention?
Huh?
What brought it to your attention? What?
The industry was working, so we read everything. We references, things, trying to find structures of things that would be different.
You make it sound very easy.
Well, it wasn't. A lot of work. And we, for many years, sold tank cars of the uron structure, which was very resistant to breaking down with chlorine, and it had many other special properties. But we spent maybe 2 years of work to make it from a practical, which normally, if you followed the formula, the way it was made in this article in Organic, I think it was a Journal of Organic Chemistry, would cost you $10-$20 a pound. We were selling the damn stuff for like, I don't know, 20 cents a pound in commercial quantities. So that was a key thing.
When was that?
Let me see. This may have some references to that. You know, the dates.
Well, I'm just saying, is it 50s or 60s?
It probably was...
Like,